Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
And welcome to the start of a new week, everybody. I'm sure many of you, maybe a little bit bleary-eyed as you begin on this Monday, whenever you find Dog Nation Daily presented by Pella Window and Door for you to listen to here today. I know many of you staying up late last night following some of the storm activity, depending on where you are in the state of Georgia, really around the South. There were some kind of harrowing moments a little bit. Certain parts of our state hit pretty hard. So if you find yourself today in the aftermath of all of that, wherever you might be, certainly our prayers and continued thoughts with you as we're all dealing with a month and a season that in some respects I cannot wait to put in the rearview mirror. I generally speaking have a pretty optimistic outlook, but when you add the tornado warning into a coronavirus, I'm like, at a certain point I've sort of had enough. So if you find yourself also kind of at your wit's end on some of this, hopefully we can be an entertaining outlet for you today to take some of your mind off of that. One thing I do believe you're going to enjoy later on, what I think is a really good conversation with former Georgia offensive lineman, former UGA All-American. He's our Dog Nation analyst. He knows the offensive line position really well. John Stinchcomb will go a deep dive into Micah Morris, the newest Georgia offensive line commit. Not the latest commit. That was Lavoisier Carroll, the running back. But Morris was a big addition to the Dogs last week, and John Stinchcomb will do his part to tell us how big as a part of a Marlowe's Tavern insider update here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before we get to that, speaking of recruiting, I thought this was really kind of fun. Not the biggest news necessarily, but just kind of fun and pretty creative all the way around. And it's going to lead me to admit a hypocrisy that many of you are probably already pretty aware of, but pretty good place for us to start here today. So James Williams, the five-star safety, tweeted a graphic made for him by Georgia, and I thought this looked really really kind of cool. The basic text of the graphic says, American Heritage Pipeline to the Dogs. Obviously, American Heritage in Plantation, Florida. That's Williams School. But in addition to Williams on the graphic, you see Sony Michelle, you see Tyson Campbell, you see former Georgia wide receiver Isaiah McKenzie. I think you could have also added Marshall Morgan, the kicker, into this. Didn't he go to American Heritage as well? So you could have actually put another American Heritage player, but maybe Georgia felt like a kicker wasn't the best way to sell a safety on coming to the school. But nonetheless, pretty good pipeline from American Heritage there to UGA. They make a graphic with all of those guys. James Williams tweets that out. Sony Michelle saw that he tweeted it and said, join the fam. So everything about this is kind of a feel-good vibe, right? That Georgia is selling a player at a high school that's produced some really good players before. And I think the sky is still the limit for a guy like Tyson Campbell. Obviously, we know how valuable Isaiah McKenzie was back in 2016. And, of course, Sony Michelle goes down as one of the all-time gray dogs. So that's a nice pipeline in a power program there in Plantation, Florida. Georgia's been kind of thought to be in a good spot for James Williams. Leaning on all of this just seems like a smart thing to do. And the edit, the way that Georgia goes about that, is just really creative. So it's kind of a win all the way around. The thing I have to be honest and admit, though, is it does unearth a certain hypocrisy with me in that I'm also a guy that has talked a lot about, ooh, I love the idea of prioritizing in-state guys. Not that I don't want Georgia to recruit nationally, but when you have a chance to kind of go out there and get a guy from the state of Georgia, there's just something really special about that. You kind of cultivate a special level of fan favorite status by being a dog from Georgia playing for your home state. We can all cite some examples of that. And yet when I see Georgia leaning into its roots in Plantation, Florida, going down to American Heritage, one of the top programs in the Sunshine State, and kind of selling that there, admittedly, I sort of like that too. And so I don't really know where this kind of leaves you with all of this, other than to say that there probably is room for both at Georgia. When you have a very deep level of talent the way this state provides, and when you think about how special it is for guys who grow up cheering for Georgia, get a chance to play for Georgia, you do sort of hope that a good number of names in the recruiting class each and every year are filled up by that. But when you think about the national pedigree that Georgia's established for itself, the work that it's done in South Florida, in part to make that happen. Continuing to lean on that probably makes some sense, too. And for the most part, every Georgia fan kind of agrees with this, that there really is no all one way or all another. Georgia's solely a national recruiting program. There are programs that have to be. Georgia doesn't. But it's kind of nice to have a national footprint. It's also kind of nice to be able to sell that cachet of, why would you travel somewhere else a long way away from home to play your college football when you could stay right here in your home state of Georgia and play for UGA? I think it's really cool that Georgia's able to do both on that front. And by the way, one more quick point on this topic, and I hope this doesn't come across as if I'm burying James Coley, because that's not my intention, but I did believe that Georgia needed a big change to its offense after this past season. James Coley's offensive coordinator, that experiment failed. Coley was not getting the job done. And the decision to move away from him, not necessarily fire him, because I think that Coley would have had a role in the staff, but certainly moving away from him as offensive coordinator, the decision to do that always kind of came with the caveat of, yeah, but if you let him go, if you move on to somebody else, you lose one of your top recruiters. And Coley, to his credit, had been a very good recruiter at UGA. And prior to his time at Georgia, that was something that Coley had a well-earned reputation for. But the one thing I always said was that the importance of offensive expertise is so significant that I will put whatever Coley's recruiting success in South Florida has been, that was the area in which he dominated, however successful he had been, I'll put that at risk because I have to have better on-field coaching. James Coley just was not getting it done. This is not like mid-90s AM sports radio where it's fire the coach, fire the coach, fire the coach. That's not what we do around here. Those of you that have listened for a long time, you know, you kind of understand that. That we don't go around just trashing coaches the way that, you know, the radio would have done 3 decades ago. That's not the way that we kind of go about our business. And most of you are very well aware of that. But when you look at the job that Coley, you know, has done, it's pretty obvious that you needed some sort of change. And the risk of, well, how are you going to still recruit South Florida if James Coley's not here anymore? I think when you see the creative stuff that Georgia's doing on social media with James Williams, realizing that Georgia's in a good spot with him, Dallas Turner over at St. Thomas Aquinas got kind of a similar message, and Georgia seemingly is in a pretty good spot with Turner too from St. Thomas Aquinas, you know, you see some evidence that Georgia is still going to be heavily involved in recruiting down in South Florida, even without James Coley being there. Coley's not the only person who's going to be capable of recruiting that part of the state of Florida for Georgia. And yeah, I think you see more examples of that right now. Let me also kind of transition over to one more aspect of all of this. Seeing Sony Michel mentioned, seeing him respond to the James Williams tweet kind of brings to mind something that kind of got kicked around on the internet over the course of the weekend. I know I mentioned this, the fact that ESPN put out its top 10 RBUs, running back universities of the college football playoff BCS era. Georgia didn't even make the top 10 on that. I don't think this is the kind of thing that you ought to get really mad about, even if it does cause you to roll your eyes a little bit. I think sometimes the people who rank this stuff, whoever it is, they probably don't know quite as much about the subject as you might think they would, even though they work for ESPN. And ultimately, I guess the biggest takeaway on all of this is ESPN may not have noticed the work that Georgia's done with its running backs in recent years, whether it be, you know, guys like Sony Michel, the aforementioned, or Nick Chubb, or soon to be DeAndre Swift, whether it's guys like Knowshon Moreno going back to the BCS era. Certainly ESPN may not have noticed this as much as you might want them to, but the constituency that matters most, they've noticed this plenty. So if you were one of the people that saw the tweet from ESPN and the absence of Georgia on the top 10 rankings of running back universities of the BCS college football playoff era, let me give you one little thing that might make you feel a little bit better about that. Let's go back to the recruitment of Kendall Milton for a moment from Clovis, California, a suburban area near Fresno. When Milton was talking about one of the reasons why he was interested in Georgia, what made such a long way away Georgia an attractive spot for him, one of the things that Milton mentioned, I think this is really interesting, it's not just the pedigree of running backs that Georgia's had going way back to the past for guys like Herschel Walker, but the fact that, as Milton saw, the great Georgia running backs had been so contemporary, had been so modern times, that Milton wasn't taking the baton from some guy who had been at the school decades and decades ago, but guys who had just been there. And as Milton said, were working with Del McGee. And McGee was also going to get a chance to work with him. So if you didn't like what ESPN said about Georgia and its heritage of running backs, I think you will like Kendall Milton on why that same running back history was so instrumental in his decision to choose UGA. Let me let you hear this right now.
It's huge to me, you know, especially Coach McGee, you know, coaching a majority of those backs. So it just shows that he knows what he's doing. He knows how to get people to the league, and that's my end goal that I want. So, you know, that attracts me.
Yeah, attracted by the idea of following the footsteps of Sony Michel, following in the footsteps of Nick Chubb, of Todd Gurley before them, of what DeAndre Swift's about to do as he embarks on his NFL career. ESPN may not have noticed that, but the running backs, the constituency that matters most, the next great generation of UGA stars, they've noticed that plenty, and ultimately that may be the only thing that really matters. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, and we're really glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. We are still on video, and we're doing that every morning at 10. It's not the same kind of show, the sort of official edition of Dog Nation Daily, for the most part, podcast and radio only for the moment, but still really, really fun to be on video and talking to you, taking your comments. So join us on Facebook or YouTube at 10 a.m. for that. As I said before, it's great to be on the air in the Classic City every single day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast wherever you find them, including Spotify now. It's good to be with you on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And of course, Pella Window and Door can help equip your house with energy efficient windows and doors, and to best serve you during these unique times, you can connect with Pella through video. Just go to PellaBranch.com. That'll get you in touch with a Pella expert. They'll kind of walk you through the entire process, all the various installation options, all the ways in which you can kind of just learn more about how to get new doors, new windows. You know how valuable that can be for you. Increasing the curb appeal can increase the resale value. Obviously, you keep the energy inside your home. That really matters. And you can find out more about your options on that through the magic of video by setting something up at PellaBranch.com. You can also give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. And between now and April 23rd, make sure you take advantage of a great offer. You can replace all the windows in your home for as low as $78 per month, or you can get 40% off qualifying installation. So great savings right now at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They are viewed to be the best. All right, as I said before, we've got a really fun conversation coming up with John Stinchcomb in a moment as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Before we get to that, though, I want to take a little bit of time to kind of handle like a logistical issue for a moment, because I think there was something interesting that Smart said a few days ago, Georgia coach Kirby Smart, when he spoke to reporters. The question came up of, and at the time, this was newly allowable, I guess is the word I'm looking for here, the ability for coaches to have those video conference meetings with players and do some teaching and do some talking and some game planning. Looking ahead to some of the X's and O's for the season that had just started happening, Smart was asked how valuable that was, what Georgia was going to get out of that. Smart was pretty honest at the time that I guess the true value of all this remains to be seen. This is interesting nonetheless on how Georgia is going to use these abilities to technology, video conference, to speak with players in the time that's allowable right now. Let me let you hear Kirby on that topic.
I don't know how much of a help it'll be. We're just on the first baby steps of it. We've been preparing for that. We initially wanted to do that right when it started, and the SEC told us initially we could not do that. And I know other conferences were doing that, and then we got the capability as of yesterday to do that. So in anticipation of doing it, we were trying to get ready. We were practicing ourselves. Uniquely, a lot of these kids are better at these technological things than the coaches are. So we had to practice ourselves. We tried to do sessions within ourselves and practice to get ready so that we hit the ground running yesterday, and that those 2 hours are used, you know, for football and not, you know, trying to get on, trying to get set up, trying to get this done. I mean, you want to be up and running when you get an opportunity, and that's what we were able to do yesterday. How much will it help? I think that's speculative. I don't know that. I just hope that we're using them wiser than other people.
Here's the thing that I've been a believer in, and Smart says at the end that he hopes that whatever technology to have meetings, they use it wiser than their opponents do. Here's what I think true wisdom is going to be as we head towards the upcoming season. Who does simple better? Who can create an easy-to-understand offensive scheme, especially for so many of these SEC teams that are transitioning with new quarterbacks, or or quarterbacks in a more expanded role they've been in the past, who's a good teacher and who can show brilliance by demonstrating simplicity. I think that's going to be really important. I said off the top of the program that the transition, I believe, away from James Coley towards a different offensive mind was really important for Georgia. And one of the ways in which Munkin, the new offensive coordinator, Todd Munkin, can establish his value to Georgia quickly is not by seeing how complicated he can make the offensive scheme and seeing how much meeting time he can utilize during the coronavirus shutdown to get all that taught. No, to me, this comes down to when you get a chance to be face-to-face and hands-on with guys later on, can you get up and running quickly? Can you teach something that's easy to understand? Can you kind of go back to the basics and build off that over the course of the season? That, to me, is what's going to be valuable, and that's one of the ways that Munkin will demonstrate his value to UGA. It's really good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. An update on Dwan Mathis and Dominic Blaylock coming up in just a few moments. But for now, as promised, a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with John Stinchcomb.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It's time now for a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. I'll get ready to welcome in John Stinchcomb for this, and obviously a lot we want to talk to John about, including the recent commitment of four-star offensive lineman Micah Morris, a nice addition for Georgia's 2021 class. John, before we kind of get into any of that, I'll at least start this way. Hope you guys are doing well and have had a nice week and enjoyed a happy Easter yesterday, and we just appreciate you being with us to start the week here on our Dog Nation Daily and the Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
Well, we're great, and I hope everybody else had a wonderful Easter. I know it was probably not the typical Orthodox Easter that we've grown accustomed to, but we found ways to celebrate, and there's much to rejoice over. So I appreciate you having me on again, BA.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, and looking forward to our conversation. And let me kind of begin this way for a moment. I was talking about this before you joined us, that you know, for Georgia, it's interesting to watch the way in which it's recruiting right now. Obviously, there's been a huge national flair to the last couple of classes, and thus far, the 2021 class has a little bit more of an in-state flair. Even Lavoisier Carroll, the recent running back committed, goes to IMG Academy. He's actually from Warren County, so this is a guy that's got, you know, Georgia ties, even if he's playing his high school ball, you know, right now at IMG. And I was talking about James Williams, who's a five-star safety, and Georgia's obviously kind of leaning in on the fact that the school that he goes to, American Heritage High School there in Plantation, Florida, has produced a lot of really good former, current and former dogs, guys like Tyson Campbell, guys like Sonny Michel, and that's a legacy that UGA seems to be leaning on. All of this leads me to a question. You know, John, what do you think the right mix is in terms of, you know, how much Georgia should prioritize the in-state recruiting, how much it should, you know, continue to seek out these national guys? Admittedly, I'm selfish and kind of greedy, and I sort of want the best of both worlds. I want to lean on the, hey, dogs stay at home and play for the home state team when it benefits me, but I also want to see Georgia continue to utilize these mechanisms to get the top national players as well. What do you kind of come down on that about how it is that you strike the balance between being a big national brand that can recruit anywhere and also making sure that you're leaning on the prodigious talent in your own home state?
Well, I think you need to have a balance. I think your bread and butter probably should be in-state, but Georgia's goals are to compete on a national scale. To do that, you most likely are going to have to find talent outside the state lines just because you're not going to be able to get every great player that comes out of this state. It's just not realistic. It's too much of a hotbed. There's too much competition. And now, because of the amount of money that goes through an athletic department, you've got more ability to recruit nationally. In years past, your budget probably wouldn't allow for the number of trips and visits and investment that it takes to get an out-of-state recruit. I mean, it takes money to, you know, this sounds bad. I'm hearing it before I say it, but it takes money to,
right.
Yeah, it takes money to get players on campus, and that, you know, I'm not saying pay them.
No,
there are rumors of schools in Tuscaloosa that have done it for years. I say jokingly, but I mean it just does. It costs to recruit players when you the further out you get. So. I think that ability has been given to programs, not just Georgia, just because of the swelling of the bank accounts that's occurred because of these big TV contracts. Now, I like seeing a healthy contingency of local players. I think there's probably a stronger loyalty to the school, and there's probably a little more history there. But in that same vein, or I guess in an opposite vein, I like to see the guys from Jersey and California and Texas that can recognize the appeal that the University of Georgia has.
It's fair to say when you mention a state like New Jersey, you know, even Mark Richt, predating Kirby Smart, was having some success with some national recruiting. Sean Marino became a great running back at UGA. He was from New Jersey. Matthew Stafford was from Texas. This is all after your career, but these are guys who were kind of national recruits. So Richt was able to do some of that while he was at UGA. But, John, I think you would join me in saying that the task of these national recruiting wins made a lot easier when Georgia goes to the Rose Bowl and plays this like historic game against Oklahoma and like the thrilling finish and, you know, big TV ratings for something like that. You know, all of a sudden it's a national brand for Georgia in a way that probably didn't exist prior to that. Not to say that Georgia didn't get the occasional national recruiting win, but I'm sure that was a real challenge to convince a player like that to come to a school that he may not have a ton of recognition for, may not know a ton about before. All of a sudden, when Georgia's on the big national stage at the end of the 2017 season, all of a sudden I'm guessing that phone call to convince that kid to travel across the country and take, as you said, what can be kind of expensive visit to UGA, all of a sudden that's a little easier to do when you've got this earned media that comes from being in these big nationally televised, high-profile games, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I think that's why so many teams are vying for and trying to get to the, you know, that Peach Bowl game that they're playing before the season. I mean, what a draw. It's the opposite of what we want. I mean, we want the exposure in other places. Other teams are trying to get that exposure in the heart of Atlanta because of the amount of talent that we have in state. So you can see why, you know, teams like Michigan want to come and play in front of these local kids that now they have a little more familiarity with these programs, just like Georgia did in the Rose Bowl. You play out on the West Coast, and there's more exposure there, and you start to get that familiarity with folks that otherwise might not know your program quite as well.
So I told you at the end of last week here in our Marlo Stafford Insider Updater that Marlo's is doing a great thing, getting some special Easter meals ready. And I've just kind of heard through the grapevine that experience went really well, that they were inundated with orders. People love the idea of chef-inspired Easter dinners. And so I really appreciate Marlo's making that available. I appreciate all of you for taking advantage of that great offer. Marlo's is just another example that social distancing, which we're all doing right now, can still be delicious. You know, Marlo's has got a team that's cooking up all of your favorite to-go orders right now, really taking care to make sure that it's all prepared perfect and very, very easy to pick up. They can even deliver to your car when you come by, when you arrive at the tavern. So they're working really hard to make these to-go orders really, really easy for you to pick up and very, very safe and clean for your family. MarloTavern.com is the best place to go to kind of find out the phone number of the tavern in your neighborhood or how to make your order. Also, very generous act by our friends at Marlo's right now. They're currently donating 20% off of all gift card purchases to No Kid Hungry. Now, No Kid Hungry provides vulnerable kids with nutritious food and teaches their families how to cook healthy, affordable meals. So Marlo's has been a big believer in No Kid Hungry for a long time. They're currently supporting that in a big way. 20% off all your gift card purchases. Support No Kid Hungry right now. So if you want to do something nice for someone in your life, whether it be a healthcare worker or a supermarket worker or anything else, a great way to show them some love is with a gift card. And at Marlo's Tavern right now, you get 20% of your gift card purchase going towards No Kid Hungry. Find out more about this by going to info@marlostavern.com. That's an email address. You can find out more about that, info@marlostavern.com. So, John, Georgia got a big offensive line commit last week. It's Micah Morris. Speaking of in-state guys, Camden County, one of the real powers in the state of Georgia. Morris is an impressive player out of that program. I know you've had a chance to kind of get a look at him on film, and I guess tell us, as a offensive lineman yourself, what is it that you see when you see Morris?
Well, I always look at feet. I mean, most of these guys are big and have frames that will carry more weight once they get to college. But can they move? And Mike is a guy that, he moves really well and he plays with power. And that's a great place to start for any offensive lineman coming out of high school. You can see what the draw is and why he was very much a target early on. I think it's also a great sign that Coach Luke picks right up where Coach Pittman left off, and his ability to get some of these big target offensive linemen, and we're not going to have to worry that we're going to have those stretches that we sadly became accustomed to before this era of, you know, 2 or 3 years with not getting the offensive line talent that you'd hope for. And picking up guys like Micah definitely helps.
Yeah, let me piggyback off of that before we get more in detail on Morris. I think what I'm hearing you say is that if you have a drought where you miss an offensive lineman, it's the kind of thing that you can't really afford to do, because you're going to see issues with that show up in other position groups, right? Running backs are less effective. Quarterbacks are less effective. The entire program kind of less on, I guess, firm foundation if you go through a drought of missing those offensive linemen. Failing to stack up those bodies at that position group is the kind of thing that you'll see reverberations on in virtually every other area of the offense, right?
Absolutely. It's the foundation of the house. I mean, nobody wants to see it, but it only becomes the point of emphasis when you're having issues everything else above it. And that's the way the offensive line is. I mean, it's not pretty, it's not sexy, but man, if you want to be able to produce, you got to have the hogs up front. And I think this year is a great example. If you hadn't recruited well these past few 2-3 years, when you lose guys like Andrew, Isaiah, Solomon, those are some pretty big holes to fill. And if you don't have the right guys, that means your program's down for quite some time. It wouldn't matter if you've got Pickens and Zeus in the backfield. All that stuff is inconsequential if you can't protect the quarterback and create space for these running backs. So I think we're going to see probably this year the benefits of the fruits of the labor that have produced these recruiting classes, even for guys that we haven't seen on the field, but the ability to step right in and replace some of this NFL-worthy talent that Georgia just lost and not have that big of a drop-off is going to be very important.
In the time we have left, let me go back to Morris here for a second. And one of the things you and I have talked about before is the assumption, and some people have, you know, gone a little further in suggesting this, that the transition from Pittman to Luke is going to invite a more athletic offensive lineman to the program, someone who moves a little bit better, maybe not to say that the previous iterations of Georgia offensive line couldn't move, but they probably favored size over athleticism to a degree. I think it's probably fair to say. How do you think Morris fits into that? In your mind, is this more of a Sam Pittman-style mauler, or more of what we think of as Matt Luke maybe bringing in a transitional Georgia offensive line that's going to value maybe footwork a little bit more?
I think there's players that it doesn't matter whether you're looking, you know, some coaches, Coach Cromer comes to mind in the NFL. He prefers big offensive linemen. But every offensive line coach prefers guys that can get the job done. Whether,
yeah,
you know, they're looking for monsters or they're looking for those with the sweetest feet. If you find guys that are capable, that have some natural ability and are very instinctual football players, you want them on your team, no matter whether they, quote-unquote, fit your prototype or not. And Micah Morris is one of those guys, in my mind, that, you know, he plays with good power and he has good feet. It wouldn't matter if, you know, if you're cut from the cloth of Coach Pittman that likes those, you know, for a while it was the classes of Isaiah Wilson and Ben Cleveland that are,
yeah,
and those are huge humans.
Yeah.
And Micah, correct me if I'm wrong, he's not near as big as they were, especially coming out of high
sure.
school.
Sure.
But that type of talent of, I mean, Micah is a guy who moves well. And
yeah,
he's able to play with power. So I think he's got that universal appeal.
Squeeze in one final thing. You mentioned Luke, mentioned Pittman. you know, we've obviously talked a lot about him, and I can tell that you think that Luke's got a chance of having great success at UGA. I guess in terms of the way that he's been warmly received by fans and the way that he's had obviously success in the recruiting trail and the one game he's coached in, the Georgia offensive line, for the most part, kind of got the job done. It seems like that Georgia has made a nice transition here. And when you have a guy like Pittman, who is as popular as he was, Luke kind of stepping in and filling that void this quickly, that's probably not as easy to do as Luke has maybe made it look in terms of not making people think back to the old popular assistant coach and truly, I think, be anticipatory about what the future holds. Luke's transition here into this role has been a lot smoother than maybe it probably should have been under normal circumstances, right?
I think it has already proven to be an exceptional hire. I don't think many people could step into that role, mainly because of Coach Pittman and his what he was able to do in a short period of time with the program, just the amount of respect and prowess that he held. That's hard. You lose a guy like that and to another head coaching spot, and you're able to very quickly find someone who's, you know, he's an offensive lineman at heart, having played it, having coached it, and has just come off a head coaching job. So, I mean, highly qualified, a guy who has great rapport with players, can recruit well, can coach well, can help with scheme. I mean, it was that's a very impressive hire. A lot of guys, when you lose someone of Coach Pittman's prowess and caliber, you're not going to be able to replace him very well. And I realize that Coach Luke has kind of inherited and coached one game for Georgia, and there's still much to be proven. But early signs all point to that being one of the best hires that Coach Smart has been able to make in such a important short period of time. With the end of the season and recruiting, man, it was a big pickup.
John, we appreciate you being here as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. It's great to get a chance to talk some football with you. I hope you have a great week, and I look forward to chatting with you again on the program next week as well.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Very good stuff from John Stinchcomb on today's program. Really enjoyed that as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. And by the way, don't forget, coming up in a couple of minutes, as I promised, I'm going to give you more of what Kirby Smart said about Dwan Mathis, Dominic Blaylock, quarterback, wide receiver, respectively, as they continue their injury rehabs, very different kinds of situations. Blaylock, an on-field deal with the ACL. Mathis, obviously, a much more significant health concern, but their rehab is ongoing. What did Smart say about that? We will talk about that here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before that, though, let me talk about my friends at the AJC for a moment. When it comes to that nice blend of the serious news you need to have and the more fun stuff to kind of take your mind off what's going on in the world, the AJC is doing a really good job of that. Two quick examples. A lot of our state out of power today, no electricity after the storms from last night, the aftermath of the storms that kind of rolled through here in the state of Georgia. The AJC's got good coverage on all of that. As I said before, sometimes it's not good news, but you still need good coverage. The AJC's got that. Of course, the continued issue with the coronavirus and how that's impacting our state, the AJC really providing unparalleled coverage of that. So hope you'll check that at AJC.com. And then there's some fun stuff as well. Sports columnist Michael Cunningham on the subject of what Todd Gurley's impact could be on the Falcons and the idea that it could be even bigger than maybe some have assumed at this stage of Gurley's career. Obviously, a lot of UGA fans will like that. And the AJC's been doing a really good job looking back on some of the most significant moments in Atlanta sports history, including the night that Fred McGriff made his debut at Fulton County Stadium. The stadium caught on fire, and, well, the Braves did as well, as the bat of McGriff led the Braves in a thrilling way back in the early 90s. Good stuff from the AJC on all of that. Now for our SEC through, let me take some time to get one thing on my chest. You know, I talked off the top of the program about ESPN not ranking Georgia in its top 10 for running back universities. I think it's a fun thing to kind of banter back and forth about. I'm obviously going to take my snarky jab on Twitter about this, but I'm going to stop short of actually being mad about this. And one of the ways that I see people frame this is, oh, ESPN just hates Georgia. Another example of ESPN showing some hate for Georgia. I think it's important to be fair and balanced when possible, and the fair and balanced version of me would point out that when it comes to touting UGA, I would say the most visible face associated with ESPN is Kirk Herbstreit. Herbstreit's been a pretty loud proponent of Georgia in a number of ways. Probably the most high-profile example of this was back in 2018 when he touted for Georgia to be in the college football playoff, even though it did not win the SEC. Herbstreit argued for Georgia over Oklahoma. Ultimately, the committee still went with the Sooners. But there have been a couple of examples lately where ESPN has not exactly been anti-Georgia, so I didn't like the RBU list, but I'm not going to take that so far as to say this just sort of proves that ESPN hates Georgia. I don't know that I necessarily see it that way. Something else I wanted to mention for a moment. Somebody shared this with me on Twitter the other day. Clint Haynes sent this to me on Twitter. Here's the headline from ESPN. It says, poll. Fans won't attend games without vaccine. And if you read the story, that's from ESPN.com, that a good number of fans polled said that they're uncomfortable attending a live sporting event again until a coronavirus vaccine is available. Maybe this is true, maybe this is not. I don't really know how reflective this poll is about society's feelings overall. I guess it should probably be taken with a grain of salt, but it's at least worth considering on this, that when I first thought about this, my first thought was, well, this doesn't ring true with the experience that I've had, the people that I've talked to, the people that I've kind of bumped into. But the more I thought about it, the more I started to wonder, well, maybe this is a little bit more reflective of what society really is going to be like. That we have these kind of two stark outcomes in our mind of that we're shut down, we're locked into our house, or we're given the all clear and everything kind of gets back to business as normal. Those are like the two very, very different outcomes we have a picture of in our mind. It's going to be one or the other. But the truth is what might end up being more likely, and this is not necessarily the most pleasant thing to think about, but it's probably at least worth considering. When it comes to what the aftermath of the coronavirus lockdown looks like, it might look like some sort of weird third option compared to what I just said before, where we attempt to get back to normal, but some people are not necessarily so sure they want to. And who knows what the situation with our health is going to be by then of, you know, how, I guess, how justified those feelings are. But the ESPN story might point to something we actually do deal with of an attempt to get back to normal that some people just don't quite kind of buy into. I'll give you kind of a case in point that maybe supports this a bit. If you think about some of the lockdown stuff that's kind of gone on, a lot of this stuff, both in our state and really even Dog Nation Daily, when we first started doing Dog Nation Daily from home, when we got out of our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios, I mean, at that point in time, we weren't told we had to do it. We just thought it was probably the safest thing to do for the people who work on the show and put it on the air every single day. We wanted to do right by them and be careful. We weren't sure where this was going, but we said, let's start working from home from right now and just kind of see how all this plays out. Shortly after that, pretty much everybody kind of followed suit on that, and then pretty soon there was a stay-in-place order issued by the governor. But a lot of businesses started, you know, kind of social distancing and working from home and things like that to the extent that it was possible before they were told they had to, because it just sort of seemed like what they thought was probably the right thing to do. And if that was the way that all this started, then there may be a version of that of kind of like that's how all this ends too. Some people a little slower to kind of get back to normal life than others. The ESPN poll, other, you know, in terms of how many people are going to feel uncomfortable about going to a stadium if there are games with ticketed fans here this fall. You know, I'm not quite so sure how real that is or not, but it's at least a potential reality worth considering. On a much funnier subject, a little more lighthearted note, I thought this was kind of funny. I saw this on Saturday Down South. So there was a player that recently committed to Auburn basketball, and his name is JT Thor. He's a four-star prospect. And I guess on a like a little video thing that he did talking about his commitment to Auburn, he kind of got some attention because at the end of the video, he said, "Go Eagles." Now, Auburn is obviously associated with War Eagle, but that's really, as they would say, more of a battle cry than a mascot. They do have an eagle, but their official mascot is the Tiger. So Auburn fans, I guess, would prefer you say War Eagle as a battle cry, but go Tigers if you're going to make a reference to a nickname or a mascot. All of this is probably way more confusing than it needs to be, and probably a little bit of a branding issue for Auburn, because in addition to all that, sometimes you also see recruits from time to time say University of Auburn as opposed to their preferred, I guess, is the word nomenclature? Is that, that's the right word? Their preferred nomenclature, which is Auburn University. So Auburn, once again, I guess, kind of bumping into a little bit of a branding issue here. Basketball commit says go Eagles instead of go Tigers. I think that tells you what you need to know, that right now Auburn's probably got too many mascots out there and too many images associated with their program. They might want to streamline their branding just a little bit, but nonetheless, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, as promised, I want to kind of get back to something that Kirby Smart said when he spoke to reporters not all that long ago. The question came up of, you've got Dwan Mathis trying to recover from brain surgery and get an all clear to be back on the football field again. You've got Dominic Blaylock trying to rehab an ACL tear, trying to get his way back onto a practice field whenever that is allowed to take place from Georgia. Again, how's that going for both those guys? And in the midst of talking about this, I thought that Kirby Smart said something that probably will make Georgia fans feel pretty good. We don't know when we're going to see Mathis and Blaylock or any of the Georgia players back on a practice field again, but whenever it can happen, in terms of Blaylock, Mathis being on schedule or maybe even slightly ahead of schedule, there's at least some reason to believe that might be possible based on Kirby Smart, who recently told reporters this on that topic.
The great thing about rehab is you can do it anywhere. You know, Ron has them set up. They come over, do check-ins with Ron. If they choose to be here in town, they can do their rehab locally here and have access to everything. I mean, the good thing is Ron knows so many people across the country that every one of these kids, he can reach out to somebody and have a whole networking plan where they can get their rehab done. And these two guys are so committed to it. You know, Dom and Dwan, they both do exactly what you ask them to do, and they know that it helps the future of their careers to be rehab. And we got a lot more guys that are doing the same thing. Guys that, you know, possibly would have missed spring that are now just rehabbing throughout, and they're committed to doing that. And the good thing is, where the NCAA allows us to help those guys.
The one thing I'm a very big believer in is that Kirby Smart does not throw around empty compliments. He doesn't just toss around platitudes because that's what reporters want to hear or fans want to hear or anything else. He knows that the players themselves are listening closely many times to what Smart says publicly. And Smart wouldn't say that Blaylock was fully committed to his ACL rehab unless he truly was. And the same thing for Dwan Mathis, a very different situation. But Smart's words about that would still be reflected in much the same way. A lot of fans have asked, is Dominic Blaylock going to be on schedule? Are we going to see Dwan Mathis get that full clear to play again at some point in time? Obviously, there's a degree to injury and illness rehab that's kind of not fully in the player's control. But to the extent that it can be controlled, you certainly get the impression that Blaylock and Mathis are doing their part to make sure they are as ready and healthy as they possibly could be. The best of Georgia, I think, means both these guys. Dwan Mathis potentially as that number two quarterback. Dominic Blaylock potentially as one of this team's most important receivers. That would be a great, great thing for Georgia to say that it has as it tries to upgrade its offense. On the basis of what Kirby Smart says right there, the chances of that happening would appear to be pretty good. So I thought it was kind of a nice thing to be able to hear from Smart, just given the fact there have been so many questions about both those guys. Pretty good thing from last week. And yeah, I know that the audio quality, once again, is not quite, you know, pristine radio and podcast quality. But once again, the quality of the information, I think, supersedes the quality of the audio. So hope you enjoyed hearing a little bit from Kirby Smart. We'll continue to do some of that for you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And of course, hope you'll also continue to check us out on video for our R.S. Andrews Cooldown. We talk comments and your thoughts on Georgia football. You can find that on the Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube page every morning at 10 a.m. Of course, R.S. Andrews can take care of your air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric needs. Find them online at rsandrews.com. As we get ready to say goodbye to you today, don't forget Gator Hater Updater. Now been 1,262 days since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Appreciate you being here. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. We'll see you again tomorrow.